Hello, and thanks for joining the Walt Weekly Podcast. My name is Walter Latham Sr., and I'm here with Michelle Sweeney McCombs. And today, we got a very, very special guest in the house, Mr. Walter Latham, CEO of Latham Entertainment and the creator of the original Kings of Comedy.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining, Mr. Latham.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate that.
All righty. So, first, let me just ask you, how are you doing, Mr. Latham?
I'm doing great. I can't complain.
You good?
I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, about a year and a half ago, and I love it. It's one of the best decisions I made. My kids grew up, went off to college, and never came back home. So,
aren't you lucky?
I know, right? So, like, this is a good time to try some new stuff out. So I'm really enjoying it. I can't say we'll be here. But it's a beautiful city. And the city, a good time that we actually live in, which is 20 minutes outside of Nashville. It's called Franklin, Tennessee. And it's like Andy Griffin. It's on another kind of, people walk. You can walk everywhere, get ice cream, and get shoppers of clothes. And churches are like on every block.
It's nice.
Crazy. Like, it's such a nice, cool, like, you're right. Exactly. It's a nice, cool.
Another world.
Yeah, another
world. Well, it's amazing, though, because it's just a reverse. You know, when I was growing up in North Carolina, a small town, Williamson, which I know you know her, I couldn't wait to leave. You were born in New York, and you couldn't wait to leave New York to go down south. So that's strange.
Some of the best years of my childhood I spent in North Carolina with my grandparents. So the thing people did back then, they didn't have babysitter money. So you had to ship you to somewhere, some grandparents, somewhere. I spent so much time down there. And then I realized at some point, like, I wanted so much more than that, and I couldn't get that there. So I left there.
Amazing.
All right.
Okay. I love it.
Let's just get down to it, Mr. Latham. Ready? All right, Michelle, you got questions?
Yeah. So what have you been up to, Walter Latham Jr.? What projects you got going on?
We have a few projects. We actually have a conference call tonight with a guy named Charles King, who runs this company called Macro. And we've been friends for a long time. I introduced him to a lot of his clients. He was an agent for a while. He was my agent for a while, but now he runs this company. And I mean, they did Fences with Denzel. They did this last Ryan Coogler project. So anyway, but long story short, we're going to probably do the Kings documentary with his company. So we're talking about that, but for 2025. And then we have a series that we actually had sold to Viacom, Paramount, Island Century. And as time kind of went by, we realized we weren't creatively in sync. Mm-hmm. So they allowed us to basically take our project back from them. And now we set that up somewhere else. So,
awesome.
A handful of things here and there, nothing. Nothing major, I'm not trying to rehab the history, but I'm just trying to, be a producer.
Why not?
Irrelevant, basically, these things.
Right. It's a tough business, and thank you for coming on the show again.
Yes.
This is our second interview with you. We appreciate it. The first one was really enlightening and informative about your history, how you got started. So thank you again for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome back. Mm-hmm. Welcome back. How long has it been there? 2 years? I had to go and check.
It was before I moved to Nashville, so it was definitely at least 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show you that, we've been out here to Walt Weekly Podcast to be 5 years old in June.
Oh, wow.
Right. 5 years.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Anniversary.
I can't believe it.
You should have been on the anniversary show. That's what you should have said.
Exactly.
But you can come back and give us some updates.
We'll save you for the book when you come back.
Absolutely.
That's right.
5 years
right.
We've been together, man. We've done over 219 episodes. I know it's not brought to Walt Weekly, but I just wanted to throw that out there to you and let you know that, over 220 episodes.
Celebrate success. We're excited. I'm excited to read this new book you got coming out. What's your book for that one to be released?
It's just really my opportunity to tell my side of the story. Over the years, people take on versions, they evolve, and they turn into something that is far worse than it actually was, and actually not even true. So being in the business and being a producer, like if I was an actor or actress or a director, I could have probably stepped up and said that and it wouldn't have bothered my career at all. But as a producer, it's really fragile because you're not really a talent person. Like, you know, you're not the director, you're not the actor. Like, you're exposed. You're just, and with the Expendables, you're expendable. So you got to be very, very strong as far as what you're doing in the business for them to kind of look over these truths that you're telling in the book, or they'll destroy you. It'll just, you know, they'll take it, they'll tear it apart, and you'll make it look like you're a terrible person, and that's a stupid book. So I just want to do it at the right time when, you know, maybe you got a project launching, you know, maybe before the documentary comes out, maybe after the documentary. Mm-hmm. But everything's in 2025. 2025 would be 25 years since a lot of stuff, since Queen's
Wow.
comedy.
Wow. Wow.
It's just a lot of things that we did. Latham Entertainment Presents. So all of those are 2 decades old, you know. So
And you made some stars out of a lot of people.
Well, I made some stars out of a lot of people. I'll tell you something interesting, and you didn't ask me this, but over the years of doing this, you realize your mortality, you know, and being in the entertainment business is like everybody's going to be alive forever. You know, you don't even think about it. You're just like, you're here forever. And, you know, over the last two decades, I lost comedians that I work with. I worked with the one guy, the last person who passed away. We did Comedy After Dark together in Miami in 2012.
And who was that?
We were about the same age, and he looked healthy, he looked fun. And then he passed. Like, it's like 10 or 12 comics that I worked with over the day. Bernie Mac. I mean,
I was thinking of him. Yes. Yeah.
Who would have, you know, you never even think about stuff like that. It's like, you know, and it was 50 years old. You know, so it makes you think of life in a different way. You know, place a level of importance on things that are lingering.
Right.
And I don't know, it just really humbled me. Every time I hear something like that, I'm like, wow, Bernie's have a joke. Since I died, it's like, what? This is my age. Was he sick? On his joke, like, you just like, you know, that's not supposed to be somebody my age or somebody, you know, younger.
Yeah.
You know, so that's it. Yeah, I just wanted to add that part because it just really, really, if it doesn't humble you or make you feel like, hey, I need to take account here.
Definitely.
I don't know what will.
Yeah, I think that's a segue into the question that I have next is, now, why do you take such a low profile during your tours and movies?
I did take a lot. I got out of a lot of media when we were doing the King's tour, and a lot of people wanted to talk to me. You know, I didn't ask them to want to talk to me. They just, you know, wanted to understand, like, how'd you know this would work? And, you know, what is next? Like, what do you do after this? And I got, you know, I was in the Wall Street Journal for that. I was in Essence and Ebony and Hip Hop, like, this all, like, everywhere. But I wasn't doing it because, like, I'm me. Like, I'm, you know, what do I need to do to convince these people in Hollywood that this could be a movie? Period. That's the only reason. I'm a shy person. Like, so I don't like photo shoots and interviews like this, really, even are really hard for me to do. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
Save the background.
Yeah.
Well, but looking at it in retrospect, right? If you could do it over.
Background. Let me tell you why he's not in the background. This is a director, and he's talent.
Right.
So they don't mind him stepping up and being in front of the spotlight. I was a lowly producer.
Right.
I was behind the scenes, but I couldn't do what I wanted to do with what they were doing without all these, you know, ideas as far as press and media and contests. And I mean, they were flying private planes to play. I mean, this is like real. This is like Guns N' Roses type stuff. I mean, it wasn't small.
Wow.
So to keep interest, you know, we didn't have, you know, Bernie Mac has 50 million followers and he tweeted out, I'm gonna be in Indianapolis tonight. Like, I didn't have that. I had to let Indianapolis know we'd be there by every other means necessary. You know, so a lot of guys are like, you know, he tried to be in front of the spotlight and he took too much of this and that. And I'm like, whatever I did, it landed you where you are right now. What's bad about that? Like, what's bad? Look, tell me right now, what is bad about your life right now because you are part of the Kings?
Made it happen.
Great. Yeah. Nothing. I mean, we could hindsight, what, 2020?
Well, no, 20, yes.
So we could say, I would have been better off even if I didn't do Kings. Well, maybe. But that's not the truth. So.
But if you didn't do what you did, they wouldn't be as successful as they are today.
And I don't like to say that really out loud, but I can say that about myself, and we all were part of the same thing. I wouldn't be as successful if I hadn't done it. So I would imagine my teammates, you know, we're on the same team. We're going to win together. It's not like they win and I lose and we're on the same team. So I just, that's just something like I said, I'll wait to tell it when I can tell it. So.
Understandable. But our question that I do have is, and Michelle, I know you have to go, but how could you just give me the genesis of the original Kings of Comedy?
I had a Chris Tucker concert tour though in 97. And the dates were basically doing really well. I've been doing Chris since 93. So we had the date sold. We were doing well. And we were on the road in D.C. one night. And he said he was tired of stand-up. He's like, you make more money doing movies. Stand-up is exhausting to him. And he didn't want to continue the tour. And that was my only thing. Like, that was my thing. So, like, when he stops, I remember sitting in my office like, what am I going to do next? So I went home probably over the next month, just kind of trying to figure out what to do. What is it I'm doing? And in the middle of the night, I remember jumping up saying Kings of Comedy, like in my sleep. Like, I don't even know. And my wife heard me, so she confirmed what I said. I didn't, it's almost like a dream. So then once I have a name that I really like, and that's how I create like that. Like, I have to have a vision. So this is the name. How do we get there? How do we get to a Kings of Comedy? What is a Kings of Comedy? What is that? So I went out in 2 months, made calls to everybody I had worked with before, and DL and Bernie and Cedric. I had never worked with Steve before, but he had a TV show, so it made sense. And then we went out and we started. We said, let's do three shows. They do well, then maybe we'll do more. And we did three shows. Then we did 99 shows.
The rest is history, right?
Yeah.
The rest. Can you hear me, guys?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought the show came after Kings of Comedy, Steve Harvey. That's interesting.
No, yeah. A lot of people don't know that. And that's exactly. Your truth is probably everyone's truth. A lot of people probably think, oh, I didn't even know he did stand up. I thought he was a Family Feud guy.
Yeah.
You know, so it depends on your reference. You know, so, trying to get Steve, and I've been kind of going back and forth about if he would come back to stand up and do one show, I'm sure the guys would do it with him. But you can't do it without him. So we're kind of going back and forth now. Like, if we do this thing with NBC Peacock is interested in doing like a reunion show or whatever. Mm-hmm. And someone offered several $1 million to us to try to figure it out, right? And then someone said, okay, well, that's what Steve gets. What do you guys get? So,
what?
Right. He gets the whole budget. Now, what are you guys going to take? But he's successful. He's, he has the right and the leverage, to do that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. With all these jobs. We got so many jobs. It should be rich, right?
Yeah,
so
it's crazy. Like a Jamaican. I'll take them.
20 jobs.
Right?
So, yeah. Moving forward, outside of the book and outside of the reunion, what other plans do you have business-wise? Do you have, like, any community-related stuff? Do you do seminars? Do you mentor anyone? Do you plan on doing that, if you're not?
I kind of dipped my toe into the whole seminar and speaking thing. And I think it's a big living, obviously. I think I'm just so not, I don't know. It's a very good question. I'm not sure about that. But what else, what is next is trying to maximize opportunities on content and take those formats. So when we do this show, we want to do, it's like a 6-episode show. You talk to Alan's on the MGM about that. We want to format that show in a way where it not only works in America, but it works in 30 or 40 other countries. Mm-hmm. And that's where the real deal is. So we've been working really hard on that for the future as far as business goes. That's a business model that works. It's not like a documentary. You pay for the documentary, it airs, and then everybody goes home. This is something that, there's an American Idol version, or there's a, all those, America's Got Talent. All those shows, Dancing with the Stars, they all came from another country. And they came here and they licensed it here. So that's what we want to try to do, is find a live comedy format that not only works in America, but works in India and all the other territories around the world. And then kind of go with the flow. I'm in Nashville, so we're talking about doing projects and music. We got 2 or 3 of those going on. And it's just fun. This is a fun part of life, make it past 50.
Right.
God has blessed you, and you just live a good life. You know, try to live.
I do have one more question.
Okay, sure.
So, okay, the book, the documentary. Have you ever thought of doing a movie on yourself, on how you developed, how you became who you are, and what took you to those stages of what you're doing? A full version movies, like, you know.
A docu-pic. That's what they call it. So I met with Steve Harvey at his house in Atlanta about doing just that. You know, we went all into, he was like, well, who would play me? And it was like really just cool to just create and come up with ideas and all that stuff. But it's timing. It could be based on my life, if I had a book that was successful. That's just how it works. And my book comes out and successful, that's definitely a play.
And it comes after.
Exactly. Okay. But as far as my, like I said, I got to tour a line when it comes to me. And, you know, even Monique, you know, she has her, like, I want to do something based on Queens or based on Kings and Queens together, you know, and it's a movie version of it. I don't see how you pull it together, because these people are very, very hard to deal with, you know, and if you hear them in the media, you can kind of tell.
Oh, yeah, especially with Monique, I heard a lot.
Yeah, and how they are. So it's tough. It's something I would really love to do. I think that's a great question. I think it's something that should be done. I just hope it's done before I pass away. Because this is going to be done. I mean, these guys are all in the Walk of Fame. The Kings. Somebody told me it's 5 relevant comedy brands in the world. And that is Saturday Night Live, SNL. He said, I can't tell you the other 3. And I was like, wow, that was... I mean, Lauren Michaels and I have been friends for over 20 years. He's been doing that show since I was in elementary school.
Yeah, Lauren is creative, basically, right?
Yeah.
He's creative and directing everything. Yeah.
Yeah, that comparison was like, wow, I wish I could have recorded it. It was like, and it came from a pretty high person, so it was like really cool to know that people still feel that way. Thinking like that. And then what am I doing wrong by it? I don't want to put out a project just for the sake of the money of the IP and then end up hurting and diminishing what we already have.
So I just want to pivot a little bit. And talk about, I know you just recently celebrated a couple months ago a million likes, but you had millions of likes before on YouTube.
Followers. It's followers, not likes.
All right. I meant followers. Yeah.
Okay.
I meant followers. Thanks for collecting me, though.
Mm-hmm.
But you had that on YouTube. So this is just the social, when you're talking, when you say you had a million followers, that's on your Facebook and Instagram.
Facebook alone is over a million, and my YouTube is over 600,000. So so collectively, it's that plus the all of the Spotify, Pandora, SiriusXM, all of those. You know, it's about 2 million impressions a month just on those 3 platforms. Well, 4 or 5 platforms.
Wow,
yeah,
that's amazing.
It's reaching a lot of people, which is why I'm really careful about what I say.
You have to be. You have to.
And I don't know who those million people are. I mean, it could be somebody of a, you know, importance. So, yeah, and for me, like now, I just really have my guy just post mostly. I rarely say anything that I'm just saying because I just very, very real careful about, you know, the messaging. And
you have to be in your position. Yeah. I know you got PR people and things of that nature. You have to have it.
Right.
Well, I mean, what do you think about these beefs that I see on the reels and TikTok, you know, comedians argue against, well, I don't want to take it in wrong. I'm not talking about that. I'm really basically talking about, why do they have to air it out in public? What do you think about them airing out their disagreements in a public forum?
I don't think it's a great thing to do. And always, especially, you know, stuff that should be handled, you know, directly with the other person. But that's what people like to hear, and that's what people like to see. So they sort out situations. It's almost like a mix, a chemical mix.
Right.
I throw a little of this comedian in there, and I throw a little bit about this story or this rumor in there, and they said, go and see what happens and watch it ignite. And that's what they're hoping. They're hoping that every time they flick the match, I'm going to interview this person. And they're waiting. And once it explodes, that's it. You know. So people are looking for dramatic stories to tell because people like drama.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't understand it, though, because from my perspective, right? I mean, if you got a beef with someone, even Stephen A., has a beef with somebody.
Right, always.
You know, he's up there on TikTok or something talking, you know, well, I could do this to you. Shay Shay, Shannon Sharp, he's talking about, I'm going to do this. And this. I don't get that because we're basically bringing, but then again, there's a monetary element there, like you said, right? But I don't think it's good for us as a people.
Oh, so I don't think it's, yeah, there's a lot of things we do that aren't good for us as a people. But, you know, people make mistakes and people, like I said, you can't. It's like a psychology thing that I'm really not good at, obviously, because I'm not a... They say the same thing to themselves so much, they believe this other truth.
Right.
It's not the truth that is the truth. It's the truth that is their truth.
Right.
And when they realize, like, you know, you get so frustrated, like, how couldn't they remember that? And how couldn't they think that? And because as people, as the years go by, people you've met kind of fade away, but that way you know things to be is not really how it is anymore. So I think, I don't know, I just think over time, they say that, you know, blue is really red. Blue is really red. Blue is really red. Yeah, man. So like, I can't just speak to someone about the way they see the truth. The way they, and, you know, read a story. If you read a story and give somebody else a book and read the same story, they'll get a different something out of it. So I don't like to now criticize people for the truth of a version of the truth that's theirs.
Right.
Is that mine?
That's their reality, right?
Right. That works for you and you want to, you know, what can I say about it? I have my truth, you know, so we both were at the same place at the same time, but we remember things differently. That's fine. You know?
Well, I think that's a significant problem in our country right now. That's why we so split, because you got one right. side saying it's day, you got another side saying it's night.
Right.
And that would include you.
Right. Everybody's looking at the sky, but it's like debating, you know, what it's amazing, man. Sometimes you gotta just sit. And this is my thing. I move so fast. Sometimes I just need to, like, sit on things and let it kind of marinate.
Right.
For less of a word, then to just react. And that's what I used to do. I hear something, I actually rap. You know, I always reacted. And now, like I said, I get more confident in who I am, and, you know, especially as a producer. And I don't really have to do that. You know, I don't have to get involved in that. That doesn't help my business at all. You know, if anything, it hurts me. But they're, you know, they're talent. So they're in front of the camera, they have more power. Because what people, what they say is going to reach a lot more people than what you or I may say something to. So their argument is going to win.
Yeah,
I see. It might not be true. They reach more people with their truth. Those people don't know your truth. So that's it, man. You just got to accept it.
I want to talk about your foundation a little bit. Could you tell me about how that's going? I know you had it more than 10 years, right?
Yeah,
it's Outlaw, Plum Outlaw Foundation.
It's the Urban Outlaw Scholarship Foundation. So the scholarship was named after my grandfather, who I don't think ever graduated high school. But he used to talk about education a lot and doing better and trying to, you know, deter us from just going back to where we came from and just becoming nothing, really kind of fading out. And he was really big on getting that education. So when I tried to come up with the foundation and what its purpose or mission was, and that, you know, was to give back to people, kids especially, who wanted a better education and wanted a better life for themselves. So over the, you know, decade, we've given away, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships. We raise money for other, you know, organizations. And now that we're in Tennessee, you know, we're going to try to bring that same energy to Tennessee.
Sounds but good.
It's all about education and doing better. You know, so my thing, when I look for people who, had it not been for us helping them, they would never have been able to reach the goal of going to college.
Targeted. Yeah, I see.
Targeted.
Makes sense.
To that person. So when I'm reading their letters, you know, my mom worked 3 jobs and I want to do these things. And I look, you know, 10 years from then.
Right.
And, you know, I have doctors who want a scholarship, teachers who want it, PhDs who want it. So we really did a good job, I think, in really finding the people who could take advantage of that money and do something good with it. So it's amazing. If Granddaddy knew, like I'm going to say, man, if he knew, like, how much I use his name and stuff. It's my password.
So, the name plus whatever else you create to add to the password,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, that is good, man. That is good. Did you hear about some professor gave $1 billion to the Albert Einstein Medical College?
Wow.
I think it's out of Princeton. Yeah, $1 billion. So all tuition is free.
That's amazing.
If you end that program going forward.
America could put up $1 billion and we would have so fewer poor people. It's insane. But we're going to spend, what, $90 million to in this next package? Yeah, $90 billion. Sorry.
Yeah.
And you're going to give most of that away to Ukraine, which I understand politically why that's happening. But then on the other side of me, I'm like, okay, well, we could just send that to them to blow people up. How can we give $1 billion to the poorest people in our country who want to make it? But after working two jobs, they just can't even pay rent. Not people who just sit on their butt all day and do nothing.
Right.
I'm just talking about really women, men, mostly women, because they were raising the kids, doing you know their best. And their best is not good enough, so they're homeless. Or they're you know, sleeping in those hotels and stuff. I know 1% of this population are billionaires, or multi-millionaires. 99% fall below that level. 99% of the rest of the country. So how is it that you can't take the package that you're putting together for Ukraine and put that package together for your own people?
Yeah, I don't understand it either. That's why I brought it to your attention, because, you know, your purview is a little bit more broader than mine. But I the same thing. You got billions of dollars for Ukraine. Okay.
And I can't believe, how about students who actually went to school, college, like the American Dream says, graduated college, and now has to decide whether they pay their rent
or their tuition. Absolutely.
Okay, now you're hedging the bet even higher. Now you're betting on college-educated people. You're betting on college-educated people. That's a strong bet.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
So let them at least get their education free, and then go on to do great things in the world like they're going to go on to do. It shouldn't have to be like, I wouldn't do this, but, I wouldn't do that. They can't do because we have them shackled. But then we'll take and we'll release the chain on all these other countries, on all these other issues and all these other things, when people should be the priority. But people aren't the priority in this government, society, whatever. I don't even know if we're a capitalist society. I don't really know what we are, but the direction we're going is frightening.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And every time I look at the news and I see these packages are stuck in Congress, these spending bills and all this kind of stuff, and they want to shut down the government because they don't want to go along with everything else in there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a mess. It's a real mess.
And the louder your voice is, that's what people hear.
Yes.
That's what Trump is doing so well. He speaks with a loud, threatening, you know, commanding way. And it's like, you either got to pay attention or be like, oh my God, this guy is. I don't know what's up with this guy. We need, he's talking so loud people can't hear what he really saying, is what I say. You don't really hear, you know, the blacks. I thought we were African-American, and our future president, past president, is calling black people the blacks.
Yeah, you heard that, right? That was right. And then he said, I can only see the blacks in the room.
Right.
Not knowing that. It was given by a black conservative organization.
Exactly.
But up front were all white people. All the blacks were over that.
Exactly.
And it was their function.
Right.
Yeah, the black conservatives.
And that's what they allowed to happen. And nobody said anything about it. I'm like, what is this? What is this? This is a call. This is world.
Yeah. I don't know, Junior, but I mean, it's just a mess. It's just a mess.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, that's just our environment at this moment. So, you know, I've seen, you know, the ebbs and flows and all this kind of, you know, I've seen it. And what really scares me is that if we don't change, we're not going to exist in 50 to 100 years. I keep harping on that. I'm telling you now, the African American will not make it 50 to 100 years from now. You won't see us.
No,
we're already at the bottom.
Right.
All right. Yeah. They said when you're at the bottom, you can only go up, but not necessarily for us.
Not only that.
We could just, you know, we just won't evolve. You know, when you stop evolving, what happens?
You don't grow. You stop growing.
Right. You disappear. That's evolution, right?
Yes.
So, but anyway, I want to talk about you.
You know,
we have these conversations. We talk about these things offline and stuff.
That's
but you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to have your perspective on these things in this forum.
I appreciate you listening to the name that I say. Thank you.
No problem. You know, hey. So anyway, let's go back to Latham Entertainment. Okay, y'all guys, I know what you're doing, what your strategies are going forward, but how are y'all helping the young people? Like, do you bring in interns and stuff like that? Are you still doing it? I know you were very heavy into doing it at one time.
Yeah, we used to do interns a lot when we were in North Carolina. Now, you know, we have to reestablish ourselves in this community in Tennessee. So stuff like that kind of, you know, takes a little time to try to figure it out. But yeah, we've had interns over the years. You know, I can't keep up with how many we've had, but, you know, the ones I do remember, they actually went on to do pretty good stuff. A lot of them used to say they learned more working for me than they did in their classroom in college. So, you know, I wasn't an easy person to work with. I'm a little better now than I used to be, but a lot of them went home crying to the end of the day. They don't like feedback. Young people want you to say everything's great and you're great, and it's not like that. That's not the real world. So I was talking to one intern once, and he never came back. So I guess he didn't agree with that. But yeah, we love to mentor. My wife is a big mentoring person. I have little kids that she known since they were 5 or 6 years old, or in their 30s now, and you know, they're living their life. So I think between the two of us, we're doing pretty good as far as reaching out to the community. But we can definitely do more once we get established here where we are.
Okay. Looking at the world, and we already talked about, you know, the difference of the perception of reality. You know, perception is everything, right?
Right.
And on top of that, if you say something enough, it becomes true to certain people, right? So, you know, based on that, what do you think we should do to try to bring people together?
You know, I don't know. The first thought that came to mind was music. I know music touches a lot of people. You got people like Beyonce and Taylor Swift who reach millions, hundreds of millions of people all over the world. I don't know what brings people together. I think, like, you know, it's hard. It's religion. I think it brings people together. You know, it has a way of making people kind of see through themselves and reach for a higher purpose. I don't know. That's a really good question. I'm not really sure. Laughter cures. I used to be the name that I wanted my book to be, Laughter Cures. But definitely laughter, like I said, it definitely brings people together, but in not in a big enough way to me. I think it could be even bigger. Maybe that's what I'm saying.
Right.
Maybe what I'm saying is, yes, definitely laughter, but music, can it be on the level of music? Can you reach the type of people or the amount of people as a pop star? And that's what we did when we did King. It's again, 98, 99, 2000. We were doing the same stadium that Taylor Swift is doing now. You know, a lot of people don't know that because it was four black guys doing it.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, she played Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. We played Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. So it's a different time. But bringing people together for laughter, that's true. You know, doing more comedy for that. I just would like to do something more. Walter does comedy. They did comedy and use that to bring people. Like, I want to do it in a much bigger way. And I just don't know what that is right now. But I've been bringing people together for years with laughter, and they've been having great experiences. I just don't think I've reached as many people as I would like to have reached. But I definitely want to try to figure that out going forward, you know, because that's more important. Just like the stuff with the foundation. Now, after you make your money and you make your career, you know, it's about what your legacy is. You know,
right.
And when you start thinking like that and taking it seriously, it dictates a lot of decisions that you make, you know? So I got to really think things through, not only for myself, but for my boys who might be looking at me, my grandkids who are definitely looking at me, you know, and the rest of the world who's looking to see what I have to say and what I have to do. I just want to use that platform in a big way, you know?
Okay. We will continue our conversation with Walter Latham, CEO of Latham Entertainment and creator of the original Kings of Comedy, in part 2.